Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Steve Cuss on church hurt and how to recover.
I think so many of these things are fairly simple. We have to normalize talking about emotional and spiritual pain without feeling threatened. I would hope if somebody would come to me and say, Steve, I think that decision you made and the way you made it, it really did some damage. I would hope I would say, I would love to hear more about that. Tell me about your experience.
Steve Cuss, next. The concept of church hurt is usually discussed in the context of the church attender who's been hurt. But Steve Cuss says church hurt travels in both directions, from the pulpit to the pews and in reverse. He hosts the Christianity Today podcast, Being Human, and is author of the recent article, Church Hurts for Pastors Too. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
Church hurt, what do we mean by that?
Yeah, great question. It is a broad term, right? But I do think it is the emotional and spiritual wounding that happens in the context of a Christian community. I've been a local church pastor for a long time, 28 years now, in various roles, mostly as a lead pastor. And, you know, the longer I was a lead pastor, just the more growing discomfort I had at how often good people can rub up against each other. They're good-hearted people and cause quite a bit of damage. Of course, there's a whole other category of church hurt, which is abuse, you know, where there really should be police or a legal authority involved. I don't know how qualified I am to help with that. I just want to acknowledge that's real. I'm talking more about unintentional consequences of power dynamics. So, for example, as a preacher, I open the Bible. I get up in front of everybody almost every week. I open the Bible. Functionally, I'm telling us how to live. Well, that's a lot of power. And so that when I'm just sitting at a barbecue with somebody and I share my opinion, it took me a long time to realize that my opinion kind of has boxing gloves attached to it, you know, because people are used to hearing me take the Bible for them. On the other side of it, as a pastor, I was always surprised at how free some people were with their opinion. It was very personal. Like, they wouldn't just critique my sermon. It was like they were critiquing my identity. And part of that was the way they were criticized, and part of it was my own problem that as a preacher, I took the church so personally that everything was personal. So that's kind of a meandering answer to what church hurt is.
I think I saw you have some experience with trauma counseling.
I was a hospice and hospital chaplain, and then my wife's a trauma therapist. So I have been and am around trauma conversations a lot.
How would you describe your experience as a pastor trying to navigate church hurt among congregants? And then you mentioned even having some of that church hurt come and get directed towards you.
As a congregant, we all take our faith so seriously, which is a great thing. But then we tend to see a church decision and we kind of baptize it through the lens of our faith. And so I noticed the difference between leading a church and leading a corporation was this extra God element that we put on every decision. I think that's why congregants often have very strong opinions about decisions being made, because they feel like it's a violation of who God is. Whereas if you were all gathering at a staff party for IBM, you agree or disagree with the decision, you rant about the boss, that's the end of it. In a church, you agree or disagree, you rant about the preacher, and then you go on a spiritual rampage trying to represent God. There is also a dynamic, you know, I went to Bible college and trained to be a minister. I went to seminary and did a graduate degree. That doesn't make me a closer follower of Jesus than other people, but people think it does. Because I'm trained, people think I'm spiritually mature. Those are not automatically the same thing. In the same way, when you attend a church, you can tend to think you know how to lead one without any training. I ran into that with some people too, is they just really thought that after weeks and weeks or months of attending a church, they know how it should be run. And then they feel very free about coming to tell me. And then there's the expectation of purity, that surely a Christian community should be perfect at love. There should be no conflict, you know, kind of this utopia. And no church is like that. I think the beauty of the church is the humanity and the dirt and the bumping up against each other and loving each other anyway.
Is it Casting Crowns that sings like it's a hospital for sinners, not a museum for saints?
Right. And also, what's the difference between a saint and a sinner? Like, fine line, you know? We're all a company of both.
You mentioned a little bit about what may cause those, like what you call the power imbalances in the church, where we kind of perceive our pastors as having a little more power. But why does it kind of take root, you think? Isn't it really just kind of like a matter of perspective?
There are some church cultures where they hold the pastor in very high regard. It's like, we call it a Moses model. The pastor hears from God like Moses on the mountain, and then the pastor disseminates God's word to the people. Very top-down model. In our church and in my faith tradition, we don't do that. The pastor is assigned a role of leadership and biblical interpretation, but I'm not any better or different than the congregants. I'm one of the congregants, and my particular task or role is pastoring. But still, Spencer, I think I was trained in making meaning out of the Bible. I've got a master's degree in Bible. I open the Bible for you on a Sunday morning, and I share a spiritual insight. And if you feel particularly seen or heard by God through that, you then subconsciously ascribe power to me. I should do that. I should be able to give you spiritual insights that move you and help you. But then over weeks and months, if that becomes a body of spiritual insight, then whether you mean to or not, you are holding me in a different category. It's not a celebrity, but it is like a power category. What's interesting is when I wrote that particular article for Christianity Today, it just struck me as like, most congregants think pastors are very powerful, and I don't know any pastors that feel as powerful as congregants think we are. Like, I don't feel very powerful. So I had to learn it. I had to notice it. If I would meet with a harsh critic, they could say anything they wanted to me any way they wanted. Like, they didn't feel any need to manage themselves. And I always felt like, man, I better be careful what I say, because one word from me will land too hard. It's like a parent fighting with a four-year-old. It's just it's an imbalance of power. So I think that leads to it. When we are wounded, we tend to catastrophize and exaggerate in our brain. Our brain actually protects us by exaggerating. And so you hear things like, the church hurt me. Well, that's actually an exaggeration. Two people hurt me, for example. Two people who are church leaders. Now, they may have really hurt you, and what they may have done may have been wrong. But then people go to another church with their defense mechanisms up, protecting themselves from hurt. And that's my concern, is the way we catch and spread church hurt in these generalized terms. I find it to be unfruitful. I don't find it to be a good path of healing. If you're not careful, it moves you into cynicism and bitterness and anger. And that has me really concerned.
Isn't it Nietzsche who kind of says, you know, humans most fundamentally want power? And so the world can look in on the church. Like you mentioned, there is a lot of organizational authority and power, especially since, you know, the church carries the charge by God to minister to people. How can the church use its organizational authority in a way that's above reproach?
I actually think that is the question, especially if we are crossing into these cases that are on the news all the time that do fall into actual abuse, actual trauma, where police should be involved. And it's horrific, isn't it? We should be a healing community. I personally think that the early church in the first 300 years after Jesus rose from the dead until Constantine, the church was a place of relief and identity. If I had to summarize, we were a place of relief. The Roman Empire would batter you. It would exploit you. You were nothing. The Roman Empire wouldn't think twice about exploiting you for the empire's benefit. Then you come to church. Inside that church, you're a child of the king. You have status, not for power, but just your humanity is worth sacrificing for. As I look at our culture, you know, you and I chatting from the United States of America, I see a culture that is, it kind of batters us around, especially on social media. We tend to be in an adversarial relationship with each other. So I personally think the way to steward God's good news nowadays is be a place of relief, where you can come under the walls of the church and your soul can rest and relax. You don't have to armor up. You don't have to put on any false pretense. And there's a lot of pretense in the church, Spencer. There's a lot of pretentiousness, a lot of hiding. There's a lot of people who don't feel like they can tell the truth about their life. So I think our job in 2025 is to be a place of refuge and relief. And I don't know how well we're doing that. I think there's more and more combativeness today, particularly on social media. And then these specific cases of abuse, We need a board that is not afraid of challenging the leader early. Most of these abuse cases that are famous, they've been going on for 20 years or longer, and the board knew. Maybe they didn't know all of it, but they had hints, or they had that sick in their guts feeling. Every one of these cases, somebody had a sense, or a number of people had a sense early, and they look the other way, they minimize, they believe the leader over the victim. Those are very simple problems to fix. That's the tragedy of it. I'm not going to name names, but we're probably all thinking of famous Christian, these people that have now been exposed. This was fairly simple to deal with if somebody 20 years ago had said, hey, we don't do that here. That is not who we are. You either need to go get help or get out of leadership. But these boards, they don't force the issue. They go along, they blame the victim. It's pretty horrific.
My heart always goes out to like pastors like you, because I know, like, especially since you're, you know, leaders in the church, no doubt are special target of the devil, you know, discouragement or pride, one or the other, maybe both to a certain degree. So how can our church congregants exhort our pastors to humility while also encouraging them in the gospel?
I mean, I think if we treat each other human-sized, a lot of this goes away. I'm a human-sized pastor following a supernatural world-changing God. I'm not a world changer. God is. I'm a human-sized pastor. That means I have limits. I have feelings. I get tired. I get hurt. And then if I were to treat my congregants like human-sized followers of Jesus, they face incredible pressures. They don't know what to do. They have doubts. I think if we just normalize that for each other, a lot of these problems go away. Because what happens with leaders is we feel a need to go into self-protection, or we feel a need to go into pretense. So self-protection is like, I can't open my heart to you because you might hurt me. So I'm going to protect myself, put a wall up. Pretense is also a wall. It's like, Spence, I'm not going to let you see the real me. I'm going to manufacture an image of someone that looks like a good follower of Christ. One common challenge that pastors face, Spencer, is we struggle to experience the God we proclaim. I struggle to experience God's love. I was better at preaching it than experiencing it. Now, is my congregation a safe place for me to admit that? Because that's very helpful for my congregation if they see their spiritual leader saying, I struggle to relax into God's presence, versus would I be punished if I shared that because we have this pretense of everyone being super Christians? I do think for boards and leaders and congregations to look at pretense and protection, I think those are two very simple things to look for. Does a congregant feel a need to protect themselves from me? Oh man, what am I doing that causes a congregant to feel a need to armor up? My board and I should look at that so I can change my posture. In the same way, do I feel a need to put on a pretense, like a more together follower of Jesus than I really am? Now, again, there is a category of struggle that I believe it either disqualifies me from ministry, or maybe a more gentle way of saying it, it's not good for my soul to be in a ministry position when I'm doing that secret habit. So there is a realm where I think, okay, these are human-sized struggles, but then there are like addictions and secret habits that are very destructive that you should not be in any kind of public platform. And it's not even just a punishment. That's what's best for your soul. I see some of these, just a handful of famous pastors, they got caught. They did not submit to healing. Instead, they moved to a different state. They start a new church. People get very angry at them. And I just think, oh man, that is not good for their soul either, to still be standing up in the spotlight.
My guest today is Steve Cuss. He's the host of Christianity Today's podcast, Being Human, founder of Capable Life, and the author of Church Hurts for Pastors 2 in Christianity Today. We are, of course, discussing church abuse, hurts, how to deal with it as a church, and how to move forward. I did want to talk about church discipline too a little bit, because I know that that can be like a really touchy issue. I even have people in my own life who have seen church carry out church discipline against people that are in active and unrepentant sin, and they see that as an act not of love. What role does church discipline have in causing and also defending against church hurt and abuse?
I think your question deserves a longer, more thoughtful answer than I can give, but where church discipline causes trouble is when the leaders cross into motive. Looking at behavior and the impact of your behavior on the community I think that's fair game. But I've seen a lot of church discipline cause damage where the leader says, I know why you did it, and you don't. Only God knows what's in someone else's heart. You know, you see all through the Gospels that one of the distinctives of Jesus is the way he could rummage around in people's hearts. But some of these leaders, they say they know and they don't. And I think that causes damage. So I think it's dignifying and respectful to sit down with someone and say, here is the behavior we are concerned about, and here is the impact of that behavior on our community or on these people. I'm going to ask you to stop. Gossip, discord, things like that. But when they say, oh, you have evil intent, you're trying to break up the church, you don't know that. And then I'd also say the challenge of church discipline is consistency. Man, it is hard to be consistent across all of the sins. So I think figuring out and being upfront about what you police and what you don't really matters.
What wisdom would you offer pastors and church leadership, elders who are considering, well, is this worth pursuing church discipline? And I might tack on to that question too, when to know we want to bring this person back into our congregation.
I'll just share what we did. And I don't know, Spencer, if this is right. We kept a low bar for attending and membership. And we kept a high bar for leadership. So you could kind of just step over our low bar and be an attender and live almost any way you wanted to live. And it would be unlikely that you get a visit from the elders. Now, let's say you're an attendee of our church and your husband calls us and says, my wife won't stop drinking. She drove the kids home from school again drunk. I've tried to, can you help? We would probably come over. But again, most of our discipline is restorative and healing is the lens. And so to be frank, it's funny now, it wasn't funny at the time. I have been in a house where objects have been thrown at me by an alcoholic who did not want the pastor in the house. And I have had a number of encounters where a congregant asked me to come and help their loved one be well, and the loved one doesn't want to be well, you know. Now, remember, we did a membership covenant, and we didn't really police it much. So we would ask people to commit to these certain things, but we didn't really go around and police. Leadership, okay, we keep that really tight. And for us, the discipline was around whether your behavior hurts or helps trust in our community. So if you are prone to ranting, if you are prone to shutting down conversation with your overly strong opinion about things that don't matter, we're probably going to talk to you about it because that breaks trust. That's how we did it. I know other churches, they have a behavioral covenant. I don't know how I feel about that because so much of Jesus' teaching is about the heart. So I think that's the struggle there. But that's what we did.
To that point of healing and building trust, you also write in your article about Christians can deconstruct their faith from hurt that they have been dealt by the church. And I guess just to preface that question, I think you make a distinction between abuse and getting burned. Would you care to like explain that distinction?
Yeah, abuse is gaslighting, physical harm, blaming the victim. It is the leaders willfully unaware of the power dynamic and the damage it can cause. It's all one-sided, right? It's the leader has nothing to learn. The congregant has to learn everything. Like, you know, I was a church leader for a long time. I am on a journey of learning. I get it wrong. So when somebody confronts me as a congregant, I should be open to, you know, they may have a gift for me where I need to be rebuked or I need to repent. If you're a congregant and your pastor's never wrong, I'd be really concerned about that guy. And if the board is always oh no, he's the man of God. Like, no, he's a human being. He has a role in our church, but he's not any closer. I just want to say it again, Spencer. I have a bachelor's degree in Bible and preaching. I have a master's degree. My master's dissertation was the dignity laws of Exodus, Numbers, and Leviticus. I am a Bible nerd, and I've been trained in church leadership. The problem is we think because I've been trained, I'm spiritually mature. We make the same mistake with our performers. Just because someone is incredibly gifted at singing does not automatically mean they are spiritually mature. But because they can fill a stadium, and they can move us emotionally with a song about God or a worship song, we ascribe to them spiritual authority. I'm suspicious of that whole operation. So I think what you can measure is, oh, my pastor's never wrong. I'm always the one in the wrong. My pastor never has anything to learn. I always have something to learn. I'd have a real red flag around that. But if I'm a pastor, I mean, I am a pastor. I always kind of feel for pastors. People expect more than human-sized behavior out of us. Can't sustain that. You're basically asking me to fake it if you keep putting that pressure on me.
Some of these people that you've mentioned that no doubt have deconstructed their faith, maybe even walked away from God. How can the church recover after some tension and hurt?
I think so many of these things are fairly simple. We have to normalize talking about emotional and spiritual pain without feeling threatened. I would hope if somebody would come to me and say, Steve, I think that decision you made and the way you made it, it really did some damage. I would hope I would say, I would love to hear more about that. Tell me about your experience. And so I think normalizing that conversation, Spencer, I think normalizing doubt. So many people go from all in to, I call it anxious deconstruction. But historically in the church, there's a long season of doubt and it's a gentle deconstruction. It's not this anxious, rabid deconstruction. Authors like Philip Yancey, Kathleen Norris, Frederick Buechner, they normalize doubt, which gives you room. But if you're asking about these churches that covered up the sin of the leader for decades, it's complicated because there's a lot of amazing people in those churches, but so much of the leadership system must be examined and cleaned out. And some of those churches do that really well, and some don't. I personally think that Willow Creek Church in Chicago did a really good job after the big scandal in 2018 with their new pastor and a new board and a lot of new staff. I think they did a good job of looking at what happened and making changes. So, you know, do you stay or do you leave that church? I couldn't possibly guide you on that, I think.
On an individual level, how can churches try to make amends with maybe people that are starting to question their faith because of the hurt that they've been dealt?
All you have to do as a leader is ask curious questions and believe people. It's not hard. But I think as leaders, we feel pressure to protect the asset. I know what I do as a leader is I'm prone to go into self-pity in these situations. If somebody is sharing their hurt and it involves something I've done or a leadership decision, my brain tells me to tell them how hard my life is. I'm not proud of this, Spencer, but I have to manage that. Oh, you don't know how hard leadership is, spiritual authority. Oh, man, that's not helpful. So learning to notice that about myself and simply ask curious questions and believe people. Most people, the reason their deconstruction takes such an anxious turn is that when leaders are caught red-handed in some of these more public abuse situations, they minimize or they blame the victim. All that does is generate massive extra levels of anxiety in the group. And unfortunately, very few of these cases does the leader or the board take actual responsibility for what happened. I mean, there's a case right now, and I won't name it. It involves a lawsuit. But one of the elders posted a public comment when the case first came to light, basically denying all knowledge. And then the comment got taken down when the lawyers proved that he's known for years. And now the comment is, well, he's waiting for legal advice to make a comment. In that system, everybody knew he knew. And when he says, I knew nothing about it, it just creates dissonance and discord and confusion and anger. So I don't have much empathy for leaders that are generating deconstruction. For the people who are deconstructing, you know, separating God from the church in your mind, what's true about the gospel? What's true about this one church experience? It's really important to have a discipline of right-sizing your pain. Like if you're on Twitter, you would say every church is broken. No, the majority of churches are amazing. The overwhelming majority of churches are doing incredible work. So right-sizing your pain. And then some of these authors I mentioned, people like Kathleen Norris, Frederick Buechner, their doubt was always moving toward faith. It was never deconstructing the foundation of their faith into nothingness. And so I think measuring where your deconstruction is going, is it going to a deeper faith or is it going to an agnosticism or a deism? I think that would be very helpful.
How can we as pastors and church congregants together look past those power dynamics and lay hold of the gospel?
You know, there were power dynamics in the New Testament, but there really was an understanding of the priesthood of all believers. So I think being aware that a pastor in the Bible was a role or a gifting, not a job description. You know, God gave some to be pastors and some to be prophets and teachers and so on. And I think we have ascribed to that word more today than is in the Bible. There to be the CEO, visionary, counselor, Bible teacher, leader, like it's a lot. So I think it comes back to being human-sized. What does it mean to be a human-sized pastor? What does it mean to be a human-sized spiritual leader? And then the other thing I would say, Spence, is proximity really matters. The closer access you have to leaders, and for leaders, the closer access you have to congregants, the healthier the system. And you might be saying, oh, maybe I'm against megachurches. I worked in a megachurch of 8,000 people as an associate pastor there, and the lead pastor was extremely available. I was recently at a megachurch, like 15,000 people. I was there to speak for a weekend conference, and I watched the lead pastor. Now, this lead pastor has been there like 30 years. I'm like, is there anybody he doesn't know? I've never seen a lead pastor who knows thousands of people. He just hang out in the lobby every week. People just walk by and he's chatting. So I'm not saying that you should be a small church, but there should be proximity. And proximity, making yourself available to each other, really helps see each other as human-sized. I think that helps a ton.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Steve Cuss, host of Christianity Today's podcast, Being Human. To read his piece, Church Hurts for Pastors Too, go to ChristianityToday.com. I hope you can join us again on Monday at this same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.